Today's episode of Vital Voices is brought to you by Oak Tree Medical Center.
Welcome to Vital Voices, the show where real conversations meet real care. I'm your host, Alexis Burrows, and today we're talking about something that every parent, caregiver, and future parent needs to hear. The power of pediatric well visits and the value of having a pediatrician who truly knows your child. Joining us today is Dr. Tamara Morse, a passionate pediatrician and the founder of Healthy Kids 242, who is here to break down what happens at a well visit, why it matters at every stage of childhood, and how building a relationship with your pediatrician can lead to healthier, happier kids. So whether you're navigating the newborn stage or raising a teen, this episode is packed with insight that you don't want to miss. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. So, you know, I know you're, a lot of people refer to you as the Instagram pediatrician. you do very well in the social media space, but for our listeners or our audience who may not be familiar with you, Dr. Moss, can you just give us a little bit of your background, introduce yourself, and, you know, how did you end up getting into pediatrics?
Okay, so I am, as you said, a pediatrician. And I always tell people, I think pediatrics kind of chose me. I didn't choose pediatrics. So anyone I went to medical school with could tell you that I hated pediatrics in medical school. You know, studying it, you realize very early on that kids are very, very different from adults. Everything about them is different. Physiology, what's normal in terms of vital signs. So where if you start off in internal medicine, for instance, the blood pressure, heart rate, you know, what's normal, those things don't ever change. And that's true across medicine, surgery, and, you know, obstetrics and gynecology.
Right.
When you get to pediatrics, it's like, why is everything different? And then even within the various age ranges,
right,
everything's different. So it can be very intimidating and certainly frustrating to study. But once I got to the practical side of it and actually delivering care and seeing what your day-to-day work life would be like, I always found I could drum up a bit more compassion for the kids. They were a bit more fun to deal with. You know, they just tolerate illness better. They, you know, their disposition is just so different from adults. You know, they can be facing the most dire diagnoses and they're just like, you know, can I get their biggest problems? Can I get a red crayon? Like my box is never a red crayon,
right,
you know?
Oh,
so it definitely, it makes the job more fulfilling for me.
We adults could be very miserable.
Yes. Yes.
Is there any one particular, whether it was like a rotation during med school or a patient that maybe you saw in internship or something along those lines, like what, because you said you feel like pediatrics chose you. So was there any one moment that gave you that, aha, I think this is where I need to be?
Well, definitely. You know, during internship, when you're doing those very grueling calls and, you know, you're there for essentially 2 days, about 36 hours, you know, you get calls in the middle of the night, 2-3 o'clock, you're running on very, very little sleep. And it's, you know, one thing to get called out for, you know, an adult who wasn't claiming hypertension, so they, you know, didn't bother to fill their prescription for the antihypertensive meds. And then it's another thing, you know, to be called down to the emergency room for a child who, you know, the parents have just now realized that this child has new onset juvenile diabetes or something like that. And that was one case that kind of stuck out to me, you know, they come in extremely ill. And I remember going down to the emergency room and, you know, as an intern, you're intimidated because there's so many things going on. You're trying to pull what you remember from these textbooks. And, you know, we have a team, so it's seniors there with you assisting. But just to see our theory and our knowledge being put to work at that time and then just in a matter of hours having this child completely turn around. And then at that point, you're now a part of this family's life for years to come because you have to provide counseling and ongoing, you know, tweaks to medications and that sort of thing. And so at that point, I realized, you know, you're really an instrumental part of what this child's quality of life is going to be like, and not just the child, like the entire family's right. quality of life is going to be like down the line.
You almost become a part of the family.
Absolutely.
In as much as the child or the teenager is your patient, ultimately you're still engaging with, you know,
the entire family, unit,
the guardians, the siblings, whoever's involved in any way, shape, or form in the care, the maintenance of the care, all you become a part of the entire group.
Absolutely.
So let's help our listeners understand a little bit better, generally, you know, the pediatric well visit. So what exactly is a pediatric well visit, and how does it differ from a sick visit? It might sound like a simple enough question, but I know even for me, when we had our first child, that was like, okay, why is it different?
Yeah.
So can you kind of explain that, especially people who may have a newborn and trying to figure out how all this stuff works?
Absolutely. So, when you get into the pediatric space, you realize very early on that terminology, sick visit versus well visit, because, you know, sick visits, and which is what we tend to see a lot with adult medicine too, you know, you have an issue, a mm-hmm. cough, cold, some ache or pain somewhere, and then you show up and it's like 10, 15 minutes and, you know, you get your prescription and you leave. Mm-hmm. For well visits, because like I mentioned in the beginning, kids are constantly growing, changing, developing, and we can't take for granted that that's going to happen in a normal fashion. Mm-hmm. So we know the way that this is supposed to happen, the way they're supposed to progress in terms of like weight gain, mm-hmm. how tall they're supposed to get, how quickly they're supposed to get there, mm-hmm. When they're supposed to achieve like milestones, like being able to walk or talk, or their comprehension of what's happening around them from a social aspect. Mm-hmm. So all of these things are things that we expect them to hit certain targets at a particular time. And so the purpose of the well visits is for us to kind of monitor, are they hitting these milestones? Mm-hmm. If they're not, what barriers are there mm-hmm. To them being able to achieve these milestones? So, you know, a lot of people, I think when they think of going to your pediatrician, it's immunizations, which of course is a huge part of what mm-hmm. we do in terms of preventable illnesses. But the other part, even in the absence of immunizations, is that monitoring for proper growth and mm-hmm. development.
Yeah, so like I remember when my daughter started at preschool, but I guess daycare/preschool, because they were doing a little bit more than just daycare. But that first like report
yeah.
at the end of, I think it was like either half year or a year, and it was this long list of, I always tell people, I'm so glad that I have a wife who's a physician who can help me break down this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, no, they're trying to determine like where she is with her gross motor skills
yes.
and fine motor skills. And these were all foreign concepts to me.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, yeah. so... I get it a little bit better yeah. now. Because going in, you're right. You're familiar enough with the idea of you have the vaccinations, you know what you're doing at a month, 2 months, 6 months, you know, that kind of rhythm. But it's those sorts of things that I think people oftentimes aren't as well versed with or understand
yeah.
that kind of component of it. Why are these visits essential?
They are essential because if they're does turn out to be some issue, whether it's a motor function issue mm-hmm. or some cognitive issue, early intervention is always best. Mm-hmm. And so in the beginning, I know a lot of people feel like you're in the pediatrician's office every few weeks.
All the time.
Yeah. So I always tell people when they come in, I'm like, well, I hope you like the space because you guys are going to be spending a lot of time here.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, keeping those appointments in that scheduled or mm-hmm. sequential manner is very, very important for us to be able to pick up any developmental issues mm-hmm. or, you know, physical issues right away.
Right.
So that we can go ahead and get the appropriate interventions started.
Because I think generally we have, you know, everybody has heard the white coat syndrome, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, as adults especially, you don't want to go to the doctor unless you have to go to the doctor. And I'm saying that as a man, so I understand all
yeah.
of the energy that comes along with that, right? But at the same time, I think because we think about it, I imagine from that perspective, mm-hmm. then it's like, okay, why am I bringing my kid here all the time? And yeah. I think that's kind of, you know, it's like they're completely healthy. What are you doing this for? But I think it's that understanding of these different things that you're tracking to ensure, because I remember it's like this percentile and that percentile. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah. Like I said, my wife is a physician, so I let her handle a lot of that stuff and just kind of translate it for me.
Yeah.
So let's look at kind of what the breakdown of a well visit looks like. So, you know, I think you mentioned a little bit already that monitoring of growth and development. So how do you track those things like physical, cognitive, like I guess mental development, emotional development? What are you looking at and how do you track those during these visits over time?
Okay. So at every well visit, the first thing we want to know is what concerns the parent mm-hmm. has. Because, you know, the parents may be concerned about our concerns may be completely different mm-hmm. from what parents are concerned about. You know, so that's one of the first things that we ask about. And mm-hmm. I always tell parents, like, don't feel like anything is too small, too silly, or anything to ask. Because this is your visit mm-hmm. and this is your opportunity to get information from a qualified source, not necessarily Google or yeah, exactly. So and even sometimes, you know, I'm not against parents gathering information, but then this is your opportunity to kind of solidify or validate what right. it is you would have found on the internet.
Yeah, you want right? to filter.
Yes. and then we seek to gather information. Mm-hmm. So we're asking about everything from nutrition. What are mm-hmm. you feeding your baby? How often are they eating? Just mm-hmm. make sure, are they getting all of the nutrients that they need to be able to grow in an appropriate way? Mm-hmm. What are you doing in terms of hygiene? Are you like, you know, what's skincare look like? Mm-hmm. Are you brushing the teeth? Like, mm-hmm. are you attending to oral hygiene? Sleep. Is your child getting enough sleep? Because even the demand for that and what's required Jeez. Varies by mm-hmm. by age. And so we want to make sure that they're getting sufficient sleep. We talk about everything from screen time to mm-hmm. discipline to, and then we ask about the development. So we, like I said, we expect them to be at a particular place by a particular mm-hmm. time. So are they doing these things?
Right.
You know, are there barriers that I can identify that we can address right away, mm-hmm. Things that I can help parents tweak in terms of what they could do a little better at home, or, you know, if they're doing great, to reassure them that, hey, you guys are on the right track. And so all of that happens before I even touch the child, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. And in the exam room, I tell people the examination starts long before I ever touch the child. Because, of course, while you're speaking to the parent, this child is like running around the room, mm-hmm. climbing up onto things, reaching up to touch the light switch, looking for little tiny things to pick up off the floor.
Right.
And so all of that answers a whole lot of questions for me as far as development, what this child is able mm-hmm. to do. And so sometimes parents are even a little shocked, like, I didn't even know that they could mm-hmm. do this, you know?
And then, recognize.
Exactly. And then of course it's the physical parameters. So mm-hmm. we always look at height, weight, mm-hmm. And the body mass index mm-hmm. or BMI as we call it, and kind of plot them against other children their age to see where they fall. Are they, you know, larger than we expected, smaller than we expected, right. why? And then, you know, you kind of go from there.
Mm-hmm. Can you give some examples of key developmental milestones that parents should be aware of? And I guess a secondary part of that is, have there been any changes to developmental milestones in recent years? Because I know I had seen some conversation around how some of the milestones have changed post-COVID. So if there's anything in that space that you could kind of speak to, I'm sure our listeners would be glad to hear it.
So definitely, We've seen a difference, not so much in what we expect mm-hmm. Children to be able to achieve post-COVID, but we've seen a change in the way in the amount of time it's taking them to reach mm-hmm. Certain milestones.
Okay.
Okay, so we still, you know, look for, let's say if we look at language development, for mm-hmm. instance, We know that their receptive language in terms of words coming at them, how they process it, their understanding of it. We know that that happens long before the first sound even leaves their lips, right? And so we assess for that. So we still expect them to, you know, be starting to do their babbling noises and all that stuff by about 6 months. By 12 months, we expect them to have maybe, you know, two or three words besides mama and dada. And then by the 15-month visit, you know, we expect them to have a few more words. And certainly by 2 months, I'm starting to put together two word sentences. So mommy cup, daddy juice, those types of things. So what we have seen post-COVID, where we were all kind of isolated, you know, kids weren't spending time around, that much time around other kids in the preschool setting. So we noticed that there was a delay sort of in some of the social skills, as well as expressive language. Because one of the things that we would do prior to COVID is that we would say, you know, if a child came in at 15 months and they're not, you know, getting the words, or even at 2 years, they're not starting, you know, they don't have sufficient words to start putting together those two word phrases. We say, oh, you know, go put them in preschool. and then they come home and then the parents are like, oh, well, now Billy won't shut up. And so that was a big part of our, how we dealt with that particular problem at the time. And then COVID came, took that away. And so we didn't have that option. And so in the immediate aftermath of the pandemic, we were evaluating a lot of children for expressive language delay and social issues, just because we didn't have the therapeutic options available to us that we would have had prior to COVID.
And then, I guess, like you say, you have to take into consideration the external, like that's because that's a global external factor that was impacting kids. Not something that's isolated to just like you and your family and your household. That was something that was impacting everyone. Which I guess is where the conversation kind of came up around, are the milestones changing, or is it just that this season of time, you kind of have to look at it a little bit differently? So this is a sidebar question. So at two, the general expectation is two word sentences. So what if you have a two-year-old who's saying like, I want peanut butter?
Then that's great. That's great. That's awesome. Now, for me, when I hear that, I want to know, are they saying I want peanut butter because they want peanut butter and this is a desire that they have and they want to have their needs met? Or did they just hear this on a commercial on TV and so now they're running around the house, I want peanut butter. I want peanut butter. I want
So situation.
Yeah. Okay.
So situationally, right, you would have a plate of food out. You won't eat the food, but they would say, I want yogurt.
Yes.
And you bring the yogurt container, and they're like,
yes, perfect.
And then you give them the yogurt, and they scarf it down. But yeah, it's interesting because, you know, it's just always interesting how to figure out where these things fit because you have a two-year-old now, and we're getting 4 and 5 word sentences.
Which is awesome. That makes me happy. And the reason I made the distinction is because one of the things when we do those assessments for expressive language, the parents would be like, oh yeah, Johnny's talking. He repeats everything he hears on TV.
So repetition is different.
Exactly. He repeats everything. He can recite it. He knows his alphabet. He can count to 100. He can do all these things. And then I said, well, okay, well, what does Johnny do if he wants a cup of milk? And then they say, he will grab my hand, pull me to the fridge and point. So he doesn't say
milk.
I want milk. So, and then that's a problem because the purpose of communication is not to repeat or sing or entertain.
It is to
express,
have them understand, and
precisely,
then,
precisely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's an interesting one. Speaking of interesting, the next question or questions we have centered around immunization, and I know, especially in the past, I would probably say decade or so, that has at times been a very hot button and pressurized topic for people to talk about, especially in the pediatric space. But from an overall view, why why are vaccinations such a critical part of pediatric well visits? And then what other preventative screenings or tests are typically done as the child progresses from newborn to toddler and so on?
Okay. So immunizations, you know, we know it's a hot button topic. Mm-hmm. And I think for me as a pediatrician, my biggest source of frustration is the fact that we have the luxury to sit back and be like, well, no, I don't want this for my child. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, like, we're fully immunized, mm-hmm. right? And so we have the luxury of not knowing how devastating mm-hmm. A lot of these diseases were, where if we, you know, go back a generation to our parents, go back further to our grandparents, mm-hmm. they can all tell you, you know, oh, well, we had a sibling who died from this.
Oh, yeah, they lost loved ones.
Exactly. So, you know, I for instance, my grandfather, so my mom is the oldest of 20 kids. But, you know, in the Great Bahamian tradition, right? The Great Bahamian tradition, the oldest son is usually named after the father, right? Mm-hmm. So you have a junior. Mm-hmm. And I always wondered in my family, like, my grandfather's first son mm-hmm. wasn't named after him. And so it was the second son we always call Uncle Junior, and mm-hmm. he's named after my grandfather. Mm-hmm. And so one day when I was with my grandfather, I said, well, how come the first son doesn't? So he said, no, he named him after his brother who died when he was 4 years old, died from a disease that is now preventable, mm-hmm. right? And so my grandfather was one, whenever the vaccines and stuff became available, he made sure whatever was available for his kids, he got.
Because
he had a personal effect. Mm-hmm. For instance, you know, I have family members, like extended family members, and my mom said, who, you know, have like a sequelae from meningitis. So you see, you know, the speech production is a little off, or the motor skills are a little off. And mm-hmm. these are things that me and my siblings and cousins never had to deal with because we've all been fully immunized. Mm-hmm. And then to bring it forward another generation, I had chicken pox. We all had chicken pox parties when we were.
Listen, I'm going to have to start pre-empting physicians when they come on the show from talking about chicken pox, because I've never had chicken pox.
Really? No. Really?
And it's always the same reaction.
Wow. I'm like, you were lucky. Have you gotten immunized against it now?
I don't even know. Like, I'm 40.
And so the thing is, I had chicken pox. My husband had chicken pox. Mm-hmm. All my cousins had chicken pox. My brothers had chicken pox.
That's the thing.
And then I had my daughter.
My siblings, my wife, her siblings, everybody I know essentially.
May have to go do some genetic testing to see what natural immunity. We may have to put you in the lab. I don't know. But when it came time to immunize my own children, mm-hmm. I took my daughter in. She's mm-hmm. she's now 20. Mm-hmm. And she got immunized against chicken pox, mm-hmm. varicella. And I was like, wow. It was just mind blowing to me that she will never know what that is.
No. Nope.
Never experience it. We will never have a chicken pox party. And then, you know, they'll never have to know what shingles is or whatever down the line. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and the reason we do these things is because we know that there are certain consequences associated with having these illnesses, mm-hmm. Effects on the brain, effects on motor function, and even in a case like shingles down the line, just having these terrible debilitating flares of something that is completely now preventable.
Listen, I'm still stuck on a couple of things. I'm stuck on the 20 kids. I'm stuck on the 20-year-old daughter. I'm stuck on... This is a lot.
I don't know, 20 is the number. I didn't even think about that. That's the number.
That is the number of the day, ladies and gentlemen.
I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Ladies, at Oak Tree Medical Center, your health is our priority. From early detection to advanced treatment options, our comprehensive breast care services are here to support you every step of the way. With locations at East Street South, Prince Charles Drive, and our state-of-the-art surgical suites and MRI, top of the hill Mackey Street, we're right where you need us. Because when it comes to your breast care, you deserve the best care. And remember, the Million Mammogram movement continues. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com to learn more. Oak Tree Medical Center, caring, compassionate, complete.
Discover the ultimate in personalized healthcare with the Oak Tree Primary Plus program. Enjoy comprehensive primary care, annual physicals, lab and imaging discounts, mental health screenings, and more, all tailored to meet your health needs. With flexible payment options, exceptional care has never been more accessible. Join today and take control of your health journey. Call 816-4-OPP, that's 816-4677, or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Primary Plus. Are you down with OPP?
Gentlemen, it's time to take charge of your health with Oak Tree Medical Center. We provide comprehensive prostate care at affordable prices, from prostate-specific antigen tests to prostate ultrasounds to advanced prostate MRIs. We've got you covered. Need further evaluation or treatment? Oak Tree Surgical Suites offers biopsies and in-house surgery. Our team of experts is here for you every step of the way. Visit us at Oak Tree Medical Center on East Street South and Prince Charles Drive, or for surgical procedures, find us at Oak Tree Surgical Suites, top of the hill, Mackey Street. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Medical Center. Caring, compassionate, complete.
Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation.
So what other preventative screenings or tests are typically done at different ages? Because like I know Scarlett's 2 years, I think, removed from her last set of stuff, and I think her next set is 10. Mm-hmm. So I know like there's these things that you do every so often.
Yes.
So what does that look like?
So one of the big things that we check for, certainly in the public health space, at about 12 months old, is anemia. Iron deficiency anemia specifically. Mm-hmm. Because unbeknownst to a lot of people, even though it might seem like a small thing, having a child who is chronically anemic or iron deficient can have severe, permanent mm-hmm. long-term consequences on mm-hmm. their intellectual development. You always want to make sure that your children are in the best position to be able to kind of receive information mm-hmm. that's being given to them at school, being able to process and function. And definitely, you know, your intelligence being impacted by something nutritional.
Yeah.
that you could fix if you're aware of it. Mm-hmm. That's something that you want to screen for and pick up and correct. So the earlier, again, early intervention is best. So the earlier you can get that done, the better. And so we typically look for that at about 12 months. And then some of the other things that we look for as they get a little older. I remember someone came in at a 7-year-old visit where we don't do immunizations or mm-hmm. anything like that. It's just to make sure, you know, are they growing okay? Mm-hmm. And then I wrote out the blood work and I said, okay, I need him to do a fasting lipid panel. Mm-hmm. And so dad was like lipids? You mean like cholesterol? Mm-hmm. And I said, yes, at 7, doc. And I said, yes, because in those cases where it's familial, the dyslipidemia or that disruption in the normal patterns mm-hmm. and levels of lipids can show up as early as 7 years old. Mm. And so imagine having this dyslipidemia since 7, but it's not being screened for until you're an adult, right. However many years later. And so
managed.
You have all these years of damage being done to right. your arteries, these deposits being made, mm-hmm. And it could have been prevented just by screening.
Yeah.
And then the other things that we look for, especially now with the prevalence of overweight and obesity mm-hmm. In children. We definitely do fasting, blood sugar levels, mm-hmm. Screening the urine to make sure there's no sugar in there. So just routine checks.
That's the thing. I mean, I know that we've had conversations with a number of different physicians across the spectrum of specialties, from family practice to endocrinology, rheumatology, the whole nine. And that concept of early detection and early intervention is always like a prime point of having visits like these, because it's the same way how a family medicine practitioner will promote annual visits, because if there's something to find and you can find it as early as possible, then you can intervene a lot earlier and then potentially hold off or even in some instances eliminate some of the things that come out of, you know, these diagnoses.
Absolutely.
So I just think sometimes we don't think about it in the same vein when we think about our kids.
Exactly. Right?
Because it's just like, well, the kid fine until they ain't.
And precisely.
And usually the they ain't is like a cough, a cold, a stomach bug. You're not necessarily thinking about, does my kid have some sort of issue with cholesterol at 7? But it's good to kind of have an understanding as to why these visits are important.
Absolutely.
Because if you have a familial history of certain types of ailments and it can present that early, then it's good to know.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, like the old NBC thing used to say, knowledge is power. Right?
That's right.
The more you know.
The more you know.
So, you know, I imagine there are a number of different concerns that parents will bring up during well visits, especially as you think about this, the spectrum of ages. Mm-hmm. Of kids that you see. But what are some of the most common concerns? And then, you know, I think you mentioned this a little bit, but, you know, how do you use these visits to educate parents and kids on things like nutrition and sleep and overall well-being? We hear the word wellness and lifestyle being brought up so much more now in medicine than in past years. So, you know, where does a pediatrician fit in that whole conversation?
Okay. So I think, you know, one of the things that I think perhaps the most important part of that wellness visit is the counseling we do.
Mm.
We do a lot of talking, we do a lot of counseling. You know, I think one of the biggest concerns that parents will have culturally, I think he eating enough, or I don't think he weigh enough. I need something to put a little bit more weight on him.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gives me an opportunity to plot patient on the growth chart and show parents like, hey, this is normal. Because culturally, we want our babies thick, right?
Mm-hmm.
We want all the rolls. We want them to be nice and solid and whatever. So I think physically, what we have visually accepted as the norm, in the Bahamas, is not necessarily the healthiest for the child. So a lot of times I will have a child who plots perfectly normal and the parents are concerned that, you know, he's malnourished or she's malnourished because she doesn't weigh as much as the rest of the classmates. And I'm like, no, this is a normal child.
Right.
And this is the chart that, you know.
That shows it.
Exactly. And so there's a lot of reassurance and kind of educating them on what's normal, what's not.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is teaching parents what their roles are in health. I had a 2-year-old who came in because he was doing a lot of vomiting for like a month. And it wasn't like, when I questioned, it wasn't like this large amount of vomit, but this is a 2-year-old with indigestion, like reflux, GERD, because a huge part of his diet is like these takis, which is not like even real food, like it's spicy takis. And the mom is like, but that's all he'll eat. And I'm like, but where did he get it from? Like, how is it in the house? Like, somebody went out and purchased this, brought it in the house, thought it was a good idea to give it to him to try, and now he likes it. But you know what? If you take it away and offer him a healthy option, eventually he'll eat it when he realizes like there's no access to. So that's always a big part for me is educating and then teaching parents that they have to lead by example. Like, I can't tell you, you can't give the 2-year-old Takis if you're buying it for yourself, right? So parents, you know, I spend a lot of time educating them and reminding them that you have control of what's in the fridge, you have control of what's in the cupboard. And what they do at school, you know, you can't control whatever, but your job, if you're effective enough at laying down healthy habits, teaching them healthy habits and creating a palate where they want to have like the fruit as opposed to a chip or a cookie or something like that, then when they go out, they're going to be able to make better choices. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of education, a lot of kind of holding parents accountable too for some of the stuff that we do.
Our 2-year-old has not yet tasted what a chip is. I can't even imagine a 2-year-old eating Takis of all things.
Yeah.
Because like you said, it's the spice factor. And then there's so many additives and things like that, you know. And maybe that's a conversation for another day, the effect of additives on kids and things like ADHD and a lot of those things, because I know there's information out there that speaks to that.
Yes.
But those are like concerns that parents should have and be aware of as you consider things like nutrition for your kids.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, we had Dr. Pinder on about a month or two back. And one of the things we talked about was how important it was to have a dedicated family physician for a family, for individuals, especially as you get older. But I'll ask you a similar question. You know, why is it important for families to have a dedicated pediatrician rather than just visiting urgent care when it's needed, as some people may typically approach it?
So that's a really, really good question. And the answer to that is, you know, when we evaluate children and what's happening with them, so we see them at a particular point in time, mm-hmm. but having a relationship with them, being able to, you know, if something presents, being able to go back in the file and see what the pattern is or pattern has been over time in terms mm-hmm. of growth and development. Or even, let's say, for instance, with a cold. So you show up to an urgent care. And it's like, oh, well, my child has a cough and a fever and mm-hmm. runny nose or whatever. And the person at the urgent care treats them. And then they go about their business. And then, you know, the next thing happens and they go see somebody else. And then a parent will say, but, you know, I feel like he's always sick. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like there is always something happening with him. Us as pediatricians, with this child constantly coming to our practice, mm-hmm. like we know we have a cutoff number in our head where we're like, okay, this is excessive.
Something's going on.
We need to investigate, mm-hmm. Make sure that there's not some sort of immune deficiency or something going on. And, you know, a lot of times, and it's not to cast any aspersions on the skill of the urgent care doctor mm-hmm. or whatever, because I do urgent care shifts, you know. But in an urgent care setting, there are, like, you have certain things that you have to check off mm-hmm. and you're addressing the matter at mm-hmm. hand. Now, as a pediatrician, I'll have somebody come into urgent care, let's say a 16-year-old who comes in because she's having chest pain, and I'm like, oh, you have reflux. Mm-hmm. But in that urgent, and so I'm going to write the prescription to manage the reflux, but I'm also looking like, hold on, this 16-year-old weighs 350 pounds. Mm-hmm. Her blood pressure is, 140-something over whatever. Mm-hmm. I cannot address that in this urgent care setting. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times when I ask, who have you been seeing? Mm-hmm. Like, who do you check in with on mm-hmm. an annual basis mm-hmm. to who's managing your weight? Who's managing your hypertension? Mm-hmm. And so these are real issues for adolescent patients that need to be addressed by a pediatrician. It's not going to get addressed when you walk into the urgent care at like 7 p.m. This is something that has to be checked in with. Interventions have to be put in place. Mm-hmm. Things have to be managed. This is something that requires a long-term relationship where you're going to be in and out, seeing that doctor and being managed over a period of mm-hmm. time.
I remember I did a show a while back with someone who was in emergency care. And their kind of thing of it was, you know, when you come into the emergency room, when you come into urgent care, you're looking to find the solution to that presented issue at the moment. Right. So it's like you're looking at, you know, that acute issue that's happening right now in the moment, not necessarily the examination and treatment of something that may be a chronic issue that is, it's there, it's underlying, but that's not what drew you into the emergency room or into urgent care right in the second. And I think that's always kind of stuck in my head when you start to think about this sort of area, because that's how you have to kind of remember it. And then especially if you're going, you know, if you saw a physician at this facility this time and the next time it's somewhere else, you also are not getting that continuity of information.
Absolutely.
You know, in the space. And that was another thing that, Dr. Pinder had mentioned is the importance of that continuity of care, because you know the history. You know if they've been to see you three times in the last 6 weeks, as opposed to you're seeing them now, but they've been to this facility 2 weeks ago, and you don't know that information isn't filtering in. It does kind of leave a deficit of information.
Absolutely.
Which has its own sacrilege issues that come out of it, right? But I mean, it does speak to the long-term benefit of having a relationship with your pediatrician, which is you know the ins and outs.
Yes.
And you will be able to pick up on little things that you see, you know, as you go from seeing them at age 2 to age 7 to age 10 to age 15. And there may be things that, because you've seen them every step along the way, you're able to, again, going back to the earlier point of early intervention, you can catch something because you know this is normal, this is normal, this is normal. All of a sudden, something here is different.
Exactly.
And it's like, no, I know I need to go and look into this because this is all of a sudden different than it's been their entire life. And again, that speaks to the importance of early detection, things like that. So, you know, if you come across a diagnosis, whether it's like a developmental delay, a chronic condition, like how you mentioned, you know, you had a 7-year-old and you were looking at the cholesterol, the lipid panel, you know, how do pediatricians provide support for parents when they come across, especially particularly concerning diagnoses?
Okay. So, you know, one of the biggest things for us is being able to provide accurate information for parents. You know, sometimes you get a diagnosis that may be devastating or confusing or and something that requires the involvement of multiple specialists. Our job as the pediatrician is to kind of walk parents through the process. So they've developed this level of trust with you. And so they're trusting you to, one, identify the problem. So you've done that. But then two, to refer them out to the appropriate specialists in a timely manner, to follow up with them to say, okay, well, how's everything going? Is the intervention that we referred you out for, is that having the desired effect? And if not, let me sit down and kind of figure out why. Do we need to find another specialist? Do we need to, you know? So we're there. And then sometimes too, because they're meeting so many different people in the process, you know, there may be something about the doctor that they, who they're not as familiar with, that they may not necessarily like, or they wonder like, well, was this correct? Like, is this the right thing? And so the pediatrician is there to kind of say, well, yeah, that was appropriate, and kind of explain to them, this is why it's being done. And they, you know, this is no different from what the specialist would have told them, but they're more willing to accept that information from you because they have that level of trust.
Right. You've developed rapport over the years.
Yeah.
I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors and we'll be right back.
Ladies, at Oaktree Medical Center, your health is our priority. From early detection to advanced treatment options, our comprehensive breast care services are here to support you every step of the way. With locations at East Street South, Prince Charles Drive, and our state-of-the-art surgical suites and MRI, top of the hill Mackey Street, we're right where you need us. Because when it comes to your breast care, you deserve the best care. And remember, the Million Mammogram movement continues. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com to learn more. Oaktree Medical Center, caring, compassionate, complete.
Discover the ultimate in personalized healthcare with the Oaktree Primary Plus program. Enjoy comprehensive primary care, annual physicals, lab and imaging discounts, mental health screenings, and more, all tailored to meet your health needs. With flexible payment options, exceptional care has never been more accessible. Join today and take control of your health journey. Call 816-4-OPP. That's 816-4677, or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oaktree Primary Plus. Are you down with OPP? Gentlemen, it's time to take charge of your health with Oaktree Medical Center. We provide comprehensive prostate care at affordable prices, from prostate-specific antigen tests to prostate ultrasounds to advanced prostate MRIs. We've got you covered. Need further evaluation or treatment?
Oak Tree Surgical Suites offers biopsies and in-house surgery. Our team of experts is here for you every step of the way. Visit us at Oak Tree Medical Center on East Street South and Prince Charles Drive, or for surgical procedures, find us at Oak Tree Surgical Suites, top of the hill, Mackey Street. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Medical Center, caring, compassionate, complete. Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation.
You know, we've talked a lot about the importance and the impact of doing the well visits, but can you talk about what some of the potential long-term consequences may be if a child doesn't have their regular well visits?
So, certainly. So, you know, some of these things that we spoke about that are just very, very prevalent now in terms of the language delays, in terms of these chronic non-communicable diseases, like hypertension and obesity, and you know this new surge of type 2 diabetes in adolescence, you know.
Yeah.
To have that go unchecked, or not be able to be picked up because they're not having, you know, these regular visits. So if we go and do the visit simply by the vaccine schedule or immunization schedule, these kids come in after 2 years old, they come in just once a year up until about five. We're done with the early childhood immunizations.
Right.
They're not due for any more immunizations until about 10. And then for us, that's it until, you know, they're going off to university. They may come back for one or two other things. Right.
Sounds about like what my childhood was.
Exactly. So, imagine them, you know, going on with like unchecked, hypertension,
right,
or unchecked, interventions regarding their nutrition and weight management, and everything. And so by the time they get to, and then after that, if you've already created this culture of, I don't need to go and see a doctor until I don't feel well, then what? You're like a 30-something-year-old person,
right,
heading into the physician for the first time because now you have a problem.
Right, because it bleeds into adulthood.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because that does bring up a point, too, that I wanted to ask you about. You know, because we do talk a lot about when people even consider well visits, it's usually that 1 to 10 range, right?
Yeah.
Because it's, like you said, it's the vaccination schedule.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, why are well visits for adolescents important, especially when you think about, you know, you start to have puberty-related changes.
Yeah.
You might start to think about mental health considerations, things like that. So, you know, even in that, because, you know, teenagers come with a whole heap of...
Listen.
Like, you've walked the road. So... But, you know, teenagers come with their own set of
yeah,
things that they have to deal with. So why are adolescent visits just as important for monitoring your kids?
So I think, you know, the adolescent visits are perhaps even more important than those visits that those kids would have in between the, like, 5 to 10 year range. And the reason I say that is because at an adolescent, they have a certain level of autonomy. At that point, you know, they're button heads with their patients, I mean, with their parents. They have their own set of developmental milestones that they are expected to achieve.
Right.
At that age, they have certain things that may annoy parents that are normal, you know, just a normal part of the developmental thing. And so we're there not only to talk to the children and counsel them, but to kind of hold the parents' hand as well and say, you know, give her a break. This is normal.
Right.
You know, perhaps we could deal with it this way. And I always, my staff knows, like I tell them, when you're booking the adolescent patient, I don't care if they're coming in because their toenail was hurting, just book the full half hour. Especially.
This could be something.
Yeah, this could be something. And especially if the adolescent is the one who requested the visit. Like if they said to their mom, mommy, I have this going on with my toe. I need to go to the doctor. Just give them the hour. Give them the hour.
One shot.
Because there's something else going on. And, you know, I try to get parents accustomed to the idea of, like, your adolescent, your teenager is my patient. You're not my patient.
Right.
And so my job is to act in the best interest of them. And that means like, I'm going to kick you out of the room for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because when I tell, you know, Abigail that this is a safe space, mm-hmm. I need her to know that this is truly a safe space. What we right. discuss here is confidential. Mm-hmm. But I need to know the truth.
Right.
So that I can assist you in the best way.
Care, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. These kids are, you know, they're stressed out. They are stressed out with school, socially. They have a lot of mental health challenges. You know, we do like sexual counseling and everything mm-hmm. with them, personal safety mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. So there's so many reasons why those adolescents need to be able to come into the office every year to get whatever off their chest so that they can get good advice, mm-hmm. good advice about what's happening with their bodies.
Yeah. So I have two final questions as we wrap up. Mm-hmm. One, what advice do you have for parents who may feel overwhelmed about trying to keep up with their child's medical care?
So I always tell parents, like, I know it may seem like a lot, like you don't have the time, but I always say, just make the time. Mm-hmm. You have to make the time because, you know, just kind of ignoring whatever, sweeping it under the rug, just going along until there is a problem. Mm-hmm. I promise you, if you wait for that, you're going to be dealing with a mountain rather than... exactly.
Yeah. And then what key message would you like to leave with parents regarding the importance of pediatric well visits?
Okay. So I think the first thing that I want to say is that pediatricians see patients all the way up to 21 years. Okay. And
it's all the way up to 21.
All the way up to 21. 18. All the way up to 21. And so we... After 21, they're done with university. We kick them out of the practice. So really, that adolescent developmental stage starts from about 10, maybe 11, 12 years old mm-hmm. and goes up to 21. Like the frontal lobes of their brain are still developing. Mm-hmm. That frontal lobe is what gives us our checks and balances, mm-hmm. helps us to make good decisions. Mm-hmm. That's developing all the way up until then, mm-hmm. right? So that's the first one. True. So that's the first point that I want to make, that we're here for these families, for mm-hmm. these kids, for these families, straight from infancy, from the time they come out, all the way into young adulthood. Mm-hmm. Our job is to make sure that they have all the tools that they need, all the information that they need, mm-hmm. all the care that they need to just grow up into being their best selves, happy, healthy, and you know, just ready to live the fullest life that they can.
Awesome. Yeah. So I can't let you go without letting the people know where they can get in contact with you. So on our way out, can you let people know where can they find more information, how they get in contact with you about your practice, your services, everything that you do?
Okay. So since you started off by saying that I'm the Instagram pediatrician, uh-huh. So I'm online at thegooddoc242 mm-hmm. On Instagram, and Healthy Kids Pediatrics, mm-hmm. myself and Dr. Valencia Johnson, and Dr. Nadia Edgecombe was on already, mm-hmm. And Dr. Lakeisha Brown. So Healthy Kids Pediatrics. We also have an Instagram page, HealthyKids242. Mm-hmm. And our office is in Cable Beach, in the Shops, number 4, the Shops at Cable Beach. Mm-hmm. And we're open Monday to Friday from 11 to 7 p.m. And then on Saturdays as well from 10 to 2. And then myself and Dr. Johnson also provide services at Oak Tree Medical Center. Mm-hmm. On Prince Charles, and we're there from Monday to Saturday.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Awesome. So thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. We appreciate it. This has been an excellent conversation, and I'm sure our listeners will get a lot from our conversation today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. Okay. Thank you for joining us on Vital Voices. We hope today's conversation with Dr. Tamara Moss gave you clarity, encouragement, and maybe even a new perspective on what it really means to keep your child well. Not just when they're sick, but every step of the way. To learn more about Dr. Moss and her practice, you can follow her on Instagram at thegooddoc242 and HealthyKids and at HealthyKids242. And remember, consistent care today lays the foundation for a healthier tomorrow. Until next time, I'm Alexis Burrows. Stay well and keep listening to Vital Voices.
Did you miss a part of today's show?
You can catch this episode and all Vital Voices episodes online at youtube.com/@vitalvoices242. See you next week as we sit down with another Vital Voice.
We'd like to give a special thank you to today's sponsor, Oak Tree Medical Center.